One, two, three, four, pop culture. Hootenanny pop culture. Hootenanny pop culture. Hootenanny pop culture. Hootenanny.
And we came back. I'm Dan.
I'm Justin.
And T-Rod is not here right now. But it's the Pop Culture Hootenanny. Woo! So this week we're going to do something a little different and let Justin take control of the reins.
Taking the helm.
And talk about video games, I guess.
God of War, the series in particular. For a lot of video game fans out there, the Game Awards just came out. Elden Ring and God of War Ragnarok were tied, or at least were the front runners for Game of the Year. Elden Ring did win it, but I believe God of War is a superior game in quality versus Elden Ring, but it's neither here nor there. I've played both games. God of War, by my standards, is the superior game.
All right.
Not that I want to talk about Elden Ring, but just to break it down, there's a lot of people who enjoy Elden Ring because of its difficulty. It is a game where the gameplay is everything, and it does excel more than God of War in that category. However, its story, in my opinion, and without having to explore all the lore, is shallow and so elusive that you don't have a good sense of what you're truly doing unless you followed every bit of this game's development and all the stories behind all the characters. God of War is a superior game for story and overall fun.
All right.
But I want to start with what people may or may not know about God of War. 20 years ago, almost to the, I think 2002 was the day that first God of War came out. And then subsequent sequels afterwards, PSP, PS3, or PS2 and PS3, and PS4, and now PS5.
I think I played a God of War for PlayStation 2.
Okay, and that was probably number two then.
Maybe.
But the reason why I say this is, the first trilogy of the game series takes place in Greece. And the motive for Kratos, the main character, the God of War, is a much simplified version, because I think at that point they were focusing on actual gameplay structure even over story elements. In God of War, the first trilogy, we'll say, that take place in Greece before we end up in the Nordic pantheon.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the gameplay elements changed. It was over the top. It was a hack and slash game. Kind of like a Devil May Cry situation. You get combos. You keep guys in the air and you keep hitting them. Kind of like in a Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, where the guy's in the air thousands for way longer than physics should allow. But
yeah,
you're getting your blades up. The game was built for action exploration. And there wasn't a lot of character development. And they tried through the installments. Ghosts of Sparta, God of War Ascension, Chains of Olympus, to build the backstory for the series. Now, granted, I played Ascension, but I never played Ghosts of Sparta or Chains of Olympus because they were on PSP. Never had. But this also comes with the maturity of the developers, as I would say, or the studio, Santa Monica Studios, which, in my opinion, is a premier studio. They give you good work. They give you good stuff. Story development is what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
The last two God of War installments of God of War, great dynamics between a father and son. Great dynamics between a strict man with a very black and white, I don't want to say moral compass, because Kratos doesn't get involved, doesn't want to get involved with anything. Whereas in the first trilogy, he was out to kill the Greek gods for tricking him into murdering his own wife and child.
All right.
That is the whole premise behind his revenge. The gods are petty, which they were in Greek mythology, and they are in almost any pantheon. They all have petty squabbles, and they hate cheating husbands and wives and all that other shit, blah, 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 you know, because that's what the Greeks were. But the Greek stories of the gods were based off of how, obviously, the Greeks saw the world, and the gods were just like us. They were petty, right? Uh-oh. Somebody just said, let's get out of here. Anyways.
I don't know nothing about that.
Oh! We're done.
Well,
anyways, alright, so I'm going to continue with this, because we got free time now. Man, it's... I always come into this unprepared. I have this idea when I pop the proposition for this, for the podcast, like, I'm going to do notes, I'm going to get dates, I'm going to get this, I'm going to remember Easter eggs from games, and I cannot remember all the Easter eggs. If you want any resources to watch all of the cinematics or all the major storyline elements, you can go to YouTube to watch all this. But I'm talking about, I want to talk about the dichotomy between the first series and the second series.
All right.
Kratos was a heartless piece of shit, and I mean piece of shit, in the first series. He cared nothing for the lives of others. He used whatever he needed to make his progress towards killing the gods a more viable situation, right?
Yeah.
He murdered Icarus. Although in God of War 2, Icarus was kind of mad and thought only he could cross a gap with his wings that him and his father made, and Kratos just broke them off of him and used his wings to fly around with. Alright, whatever. But in the first God of War, there are numerous traps where you have to throw an injured soldier, or you have to make a sacrifice to the gods, and you gotta burn a dude alive, or whatever. There's plenty of things where Kratos is just an asshole. And he's redeemed in this new series. Now, granted, God of War 2018 was about him discovering a new world of gods and monsters that he was trying to stay away from. I don't want to get into it, but at the end of God of War 3, it leaves a where did Kratos go type situation. After the credits roll, you find out he's not actually dead. You see a trail of blood lead off to where he jumped to a cliff or whatever. It's indicated Kratos is still alive.
All right.
After he finishes his vengeance on Olympus. So, for the audience's sake and the developers, I think this is where the maturity of it all went. Now we need answers. All the fans of the original God of War who were in their either teens or early 20s are now in adulthood and have either kids of their own or have, you know, they're adults now, so
yes,
they have more adult responsibilities. The weight of the world is on their shoulders, and as a thank you, sir. I guess we're out of here.
I got the message.
But as a player, they make Kratos' actions and his stern demeanor far more understandable in the nature of dealing with this new pantheon.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to go to war with the gods. He wants to remain hidden. His goal was to live out life basically as a, not a mortal, but like a man for the rest of his life. He wanted to raise Atreus, his son, who is later known as Loki, as a man. he did not want to quell with the gods at all. And you can see that in his actions. You can see that in the tone. Atreus is ignorant to everything about his father's past in the first 2018 game.
All right.
And as they explore, you find out Kratos' mother dies, and there's this dynamic that Kratos loved his mother, Atreus loved his mother, but there was the idea of Kratos didn't really interact with Atreus until after the mom dies.
All right.
And this is Faye, who you later find out in the next game that she is a far more integral part in the lives of both of them than they ever would have guessed. But as the games progress, Kratos is giving Atreus lessons, a more mature understanding of what war leads to, or what the consequences of killing gods are. You know what I mean? When in God of War 3, whenever Kratos killed a god, the essence of said god went into the wild. Say, for example, Hermes, as the he's the Greek god that the Flash is based off of.
Yeah.
Quicksilver from Marvel is based off of. He's the speedster. But he also has a other skill, which is healing and preventing disease. And when he's killed, nothing but flies, locusts, and disease are spread all around Olympus. As Kratos kills all the gods in God of War 3, the setting of Olympus becomes even more drab, desperate, dreary, end-of-the-world shit.
Alright.
So when he kills Poseidon, all the oceans rise, and storms everywhere. Fucking hundreds of millions of people drown.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they show the events. So Kratos is full well knows what happens when you fuck with a pantheon, and he doesn't want Atreus having any, you know, gumption as to trying to start a war with him. Now, I've brought this up several times, so I'm going to move on. The game story is very well written. The dialogue is very well written. My favorite character is a guy named Mimir. Mimir, smartest man alive. That was a horrible accent. But it was. He's a head. He's a head you find on a tree at the top of the largest mountain in Midgard.
All right.
And he is equivalently, in Greek mythology, there's a character by the name of Prometheus. There was a movie made based off of his name with Ridley Scott. That was the thing. Well, do you know the story of Prometheus?
Vaguely, yes.
Right. He gave fire to mortals. He gave fire to mortals that was a secret of the gods. And for his betrayal, he was a Titan. Not a god, but a Titan. So he sided with Odin. And was like, Odin, you rule. But in secret, he gave fired humanity. Zeus, for punishment, stabled him, or basically chained him to a rock to where a giant eagle would peck out his liver every single day.
Yeah.
Now, Mimir in God of War, while in Norse mythology it might be different, he's pegged as a Prometheus-type character. Someone who worked with Odin, someone who was with Odin, until there was a falling out of epic proportions is when Odin started fucking around with the other realms and all that. Odin's a bad guy, a sneaky bad guy in this game. Not a powerful, Herculean-style, random big bad. You know
yeah.
what I mean? He's a sneaky asshole. But in this, he has Mimir trapped inside a tree at the top of this mountain to where he can never move. And they need Mimir, so Kratos cuts off his head and revives his head through magic, and now he has a talking thesaurus and guide throughout the entire thing. And he talks,
ooh,
and there's banter back and forth. Atreus and Mimir become like best friends. He calls him little lad, calls him brother, calls him all these things. There's a dynamic that grows, whereas there's no talking in the original God of War series. Thank you, sir. There's no talking in the original God of War series, so they made up for it with the maturity of this. First game was great. Fantastic. You didn't know it was coming. If anyone has played God of War or Gears of War, it's like they hodgepodge the control system and the... Not hodgepodge, that's the right... No, it's not the right word. They retrofitted the top-down control system with kind of like a Gears of War third-person over-your-shoulder style.
Yeah.
It created a lot more interesting visuals, let's say. But it gave you a whole bunch of stuff. Beating up trolls, killing giant wolves, killing Yut-Draugr, which is a common undead slash like evil entity from Hades situation that is brought up in Norse mythology. It shows the politics. This game shows the politics of the pettiness of the gods.
Yeah.
Before it was just the gods are petty because they made Kratos kill his wife and child and made him go on this quest for vengeance. Now you see why they're petty. You come to find out Odin's a real asshole, like Freya, right? Or Frigga. Like in Marvel, Odin and Freya are married, you know, and everything's happy-go-lucky, as
yep.
it is in Marvel. Well, in this, according to the real Norse mythology, yeah, they're exes, not fans.
Yeah.
Right? But Odin plays long game shit, right?
Yeah.
I think his execution was brilliant. The writers were brilliant. I can't remember. Do you remember the name of the actor who plays Odin? Yeah. But he is in Man of Steel. He's the doctor in Man of... He's on The Good Doctor. He's played by the head doctor on the head... I think he's the chief of medicine or whatever on The Good Doctor. Who
all
hits, right. A lot less physically illustrious than Zeus was. Zeus was bare-chested, flowing beard. They make Odin a tactician in this game. He plays events like a little finger, almost.
Yeah.
He knocks a pebble, it creates the avalanche, which then causes a problem. You know what I'm saying? So, for the audience for this game, not only do you have a more intelligent button setup, but the maturity for the story is more intelligent. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, I understand what you're saying.
There are a few scenes in this game, the new God of War, that are, dare I say, Oscar-worthy. I would dare say... What's that? Richard Schiff is the voice of Odin. And yes, he does a good job. Now, I know, again, a lot of people didn't like the fact that Odin wasn't...
Piece of shit?
Well, no, that he... No, they were actually more upset with the fact that he was a piece of shit and that he wasn't some illustrious god. I mean, he is... But he rules through deception, fear, and manipulation.
Like, yeah.
In this game, Thor does whatever he wants because the... Okay. The dynamic between Thor and Odin and Atreus and Kratos are two totally different things. Kratos is learning how to let go and let Atreus make his own decisions. Whereas Odin is, the only decisions that are important are mine, no matter what the cost. He treats Odin... like a literal tool. Like, you do what I tell you. Or, yeah, Odin treats Thor like a tool. You do what I tell you. You don't question my shit. And because Odin is made, in they kind of allude to the fact, and I would say dare the player would interpret. But Odin has been in the right so many times because he makes it the right.
Yeah.
He makes it right through his own planning. But Thor has had no will of his own the entire time.
Well,
so he's a drunken mess.
I mean, if you know, like, Norse mythology,
yeah.
like, Thor is... He's basically a drunken idiot for a lot of it.
And they play true to this in this game.
And Thor, Odin is an asshole.
But he's not a fun drunk.
No, he's not a fun drunk. He's a tortured drunk.
He's not
I beat my wife, but he's close. He beats his sons.
He's like
he's an abusive father.
Thor, like in mythology, Thor is basically he drinks because the way he is, because of how Odin made him.
Right.
So he's like, well, I'm fucking miserable, so I'm going to drink, and I'm going to make everyone else miserable.
And that's, and that, there's stories where the game refers to it, and there's mythology where, like, he got into a fight with somebody because in the game, they talk about he goes to, he knocks, he's, like, looking for a place to stay or whatever, and normal mortals let him in and just get him drunk, and he gets so drunk he refuses to leave, and he just kills him. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, whatever. But as Atreus, as Loki, in this game, you actually travel to Asgard, and you see that it's a, the culture of Asgard, at least how Santa Monica Studios made it, is very, like, old-fashioned. Like, no great golden palaces, no hall, tall halls. They have one great hall that looks like the old, if anyone's seen or played Assassin's Creed, Valhalla or whatever, or more than anything, they make these long houses.
Yeah.
And they look like they're built out of ships, or they have this kind of weird architecture, whatever. But it's just wood. Wooden rope. You know what I mean? There's nothing spectacular. So you know Odin's like, I don't give a shit about all this. The aesthetics don't matter to him. But anyways, Atreus goes to Asgard and actually works with Odin for a little bit, uncovering a Loki's mask, which does look very similar to Loki's mask from the Jim Carrey movie.
The mask,
from
yeah.
The mask. So, I don't know if it was a nod to that, because that was our first thing, but that is the only thing Odin is concerned with at all in this entire game. He doesn't care about his kin. He doesn't care about the fates. He thinks he's forestalled Ragnarok by making all the right chess moves. You know what I'm saying? It's just an interesting thing, because he treats everyone's a tool, so he's always nice to everyone. Are we running out on time?
It's 28.
All right. Well, we're done working, right? We're done, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
I know. I want to pause it, so for the bell.
Oh, okay. Pause it then.
Close.
It's all right.
All right, we're back.
We're back? All right. So, where was I at? God of War, Odin.
Loki, the mask.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But the ultimate choices for Loki should be his own.
Yeah.
Kratos is used to controlling Loki so much that you see the dynamic when, as he gets older. In the first game, he's like the equivalent of 10 years old.
All right.
I think in this one, he's about 15. I don't know what that means in God years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they live forever. But in this one, he's about 15. And there is a thing where it's kind of like you got to let your son go. You can't helicopter over him his entire life.
Yeah.
Whereas that's all Odin did to all of his kids. Or to all of them. He used them. He controlled them. He told them where to go. He told them what to do. I don't need you doing this. He basically uses Thor as his closer. Like he refers to Baldur as his closer. Because he's the guy that's willing to talk. Because Baldur was at least intelligent enough. Thor is kind of like, I don't want to say dim-witted, but his whole demeanor and disposition is built off of the sloth of not having a purpose, being lazy because he's so powerful, and he's not. We might as well tackle this issue. All right, Fat Thor in Marvel.
Yeah.
Right. Fat Thor. He's fat. Right.
Yeah.
Thor is fat in this one.
Yeah.
But he's bodybuilder fat.
Yeah.
Broad stomach, huge shoulders. He stands like 3 feet taller than Kratos. His head is twice the size of Kratos's. He's a big man. But I would presume that not only does he fall in line with kind of how Thor was portrayed in the actual Norse mythology, but they show him in the game using his hammer on stuff. Like, you need to clear a path for Atreus to put that. He's got to put the pieces of this Loki's mask together.
Yeah.
Right? And Thor throws Mjolnir through this giant cliffside. It collapses the whole cliffside, and all he says is, "That's real God stuff right there." But all he does is sit there and talk. He goes, "Phew!" He throws it, and he destroys all the building. He's not doing all the work that Kratos has to do in order to progress through anything. So his life has been so kind of lazy. The expectation of challenge doesn't exist. And this is what I'm getting to. The first fight between Kratos and Thor. Thor's only interest, oh, by the way, Thor has orders from Odin not to kill Kratos. He can't. He wants to, because Thor kills Magni and Modi, both of Thor's sons, in the first game. And there's a blood payment he made. Anyways, first time they fight, the only thing Thor wants to see is the real God of War. He goes, they call you the God Killer? Is it possible that my kids were killed by fucking luck? Because Kratos is holding back. He doesn't give in to his rage. He has a special ability called, Spartan Rage. Or God Rage, whatever you want to fucking call it. But that's all Thor lives for at this point. He has no other thing than to fight, to raise challenges. There needs to be a challenger, or else he wallows in self-despair and dysfunction the whole time. He also, I don't know if this is a nod to Avengers or whether it was a good idea, but in Endgame, after the first Avengers, and Thor kickstarts Tony Stark's heart?
Yeah.
Well, he beats the shit out of Kratos. Kratos dies, and as the screen goes to your, would you like to restart, or restart at checkpoint, it doesn't allow you to push the button. He goes, all of a sudden you hear, "Oh, no, no, I decide when this is over." And he jumpstarts Kratos' heart just to kick his ass some more. So, just a cool little fact there. I guess, keep looking at your watch, buddy. What's going on here?
I felt like I was getting a text message.
Oh, okay.
It dings every once in a while.
But, I played the game. This is the real game review now, not the story, not the thing. I played the game. Combat is amazing. It feels good. Your control, especially with the PlayStation 5 controller. This isn't talking about PlayStation. It's just their vibration function in their controller is more delicate.
Yeah.
Has better range than I believe the Xbox controller. And maybe someone could prove me wrong on this, but I feel like it is.
I've always liked PlayStation controllers better than Xbox too.
I like them only for shooters, and then PlayStation for everything else. It's just my thumbs. Where my thumbs are at somewhere. But every action you do vibrates the controller.
Yeah.
Every one of them. Rowing your boat. Riding your sled. Climbing up a mountain face. Every time you grip, there's a little whatever. It gets you involved in the game. The animations are amazing. The way they've built the skill trees to improve your character as the game progresses is incredible. And there's, dare I say, over 100 collectible different things that give you a range to make your build your character in ways that are more specific to a certain play style, as opposed to just a general guy getting buffed up. I don't know. I'm talking to two people who don't play games the way I do.
Yeah, I didn't even know what platform they're playing.
That's PlayStation.
No, God of War is only on PlayStation.
And that's the reason why, that's the reason, in my opinion, it did not get Game of the Year.
Yeah.
While other PlayStation games have gotten Game of the Year, it's because Elden Ring is out on both consoles and out for PC. That there's less players for God of War, and there's a bigger community for customizing your RPG style people. If you look at Skyrim, all right, there are people playing that game. The game's 11 years old to this year, and
boys get it out there, roll some trucks.
All right, buddy.
Enjoy.
There are.
Oh, better get some chance.
there are innumerable ways for replay value. God of War does not have the greatest replay value unless you're invested in New Game Plus, which isn't out yet because they haven't updated it.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been out for a month.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it either. You know what I mean? You got people buying it for Christmas.
Yep.
You know what I mean? They want to see what their final numbers are and all that kind of stuff 2 months from now, so they can budget their studio right or whatever, I guess. But controls are amazing. Little gimmicks of the first game are now easier to deal with. Contextual things of getting up rock faces and knowing where to go are better. Although I will say, on the downside of this game, gameplay-wise, there are some bugs. And it's not unknown to the community at large right now. Sometimes characters that follow you will not follow you into certain areas, or their dialogue will be cut out. So Kratos could be having a conversation with himself. Sometimes cutscenes don't have correct volume.
Yeah.
There's sound issues. It is actually, to my observation, the buggiest game Santa Monica Studios has made. But also, I think it's the most complicated.
Yeah.
That they made. The introduction of the Dropnir spear was probably the coolest thing ever. In the game, the two dwarves who have been fighting alongside Kratos and Atreus, or assisting them since the last game, give Kratos an opportunity to create a weapon to kill Heimdall.
Yeah.
Which, for a lot of the Norse mythology people out there, Heimdall is a little bit more complicated than he is in the Marvel. I make a lot of Marvel comparisons just because
it's what you know.
Right. It's what we know and what people would be most familiar with, especially if you're listening to us. But in this game, Heimdall is a literal asshole.
I know what I know about Norse mythology. I know Heimdall and Loki are like mortal enemies.
Well, in this, it's one degree away from that.
And it's just funny because, you know, Heimdall is like a seer, so he knows, you know, he knows all the stuff.
Here's the difference. In the Marvel, in the MCU, Heimdall can see for what seems to be anywhere in space-time.
Yeah.
Right? He can observe you while you're on Earth. He knows you're on Earth.
Yeah.
He knows you're... And I don't know if this extends to everyone, or just Asgardians, or just people of interest.
Yeah.
I don't know. But in this, they present him as being able to know your thoughts, which makes him almost unkillable.
Yeah.
Because he knows where if you plan on pulling a gun, you know, this is just saying, if Heimdall were in modern America, walking down the wrong street, and if somebody were to think about pulling a gun, he already knows where that gun is pointed. He already knows what the intentions of that are. He knows whether you're actually going to pull the trigger, or if he knows you're too pussy-hearted or what, you know, edit this out if you want, but if you're too, you know,
yeah,
to pull the trigger. Well, in this, he can read people's minds that he's having a conversation with. So his whole demeanor is standoffish.
Yeah.
He doesn't like anybody.
Yeah.
And neither would you or me if you knew everybody's thoughts.
Right.
Every condescending little presumption, every little thing, every, you know, because no offense, but, and I assume they made it this way, you look for the bad more than the good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You remember the day somebody says hi to you, but you'll remember the day that somebody slams a door in your face. Right?
Yes.
So he is burdened by this responsibility. And he does hate Loki because he knows what Loki's intent is.
Yeah.
Loki goes to Asgard to try and get in to do recon work for the group as they try to take down Odin. But Odin plays the game and allows him to come to Asgard and treats him like a son, calls him Loki, all this other stuff. Heimdall knows exactly what is about to go down. He doesn't like it, but he trusts the Allfather, Odin, enough. Odin even tells him, hey, stop it. And then Thor tells him to stop it.
Yeah.
Thor tells Heimdall, he's like, And Heimdall's like, what are you going to do? We know you can't beat me. And Thor tells him, he goes, look into my eyes and tell me what I'm thinking. And at some point, Heimdall just kind of like, you're too fucked up. Like, I don't want to know you. He says, you are a sick, sick man. I don't know what Thor was thinking, but I'm pretty sure it was probably of the most horrific type of shit you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
So, in order to beat Heimdall, who knows your actions before you think of it, they create the Draupner spear, which is based off of a ring that was in Odin's possession. And this ring has a magical quality, which is an interesting thing, because it's kind of like the idea of every time you reach into your pocket, there's a $20 bill.
Yeah.
Right? Except for smithing, it's the easiest thing for a smith to do is reforge a gold ring. Right? You can use it for anything. It has a certain weight, it has a certain ounce.
Yep.
You know how many rings it would take to fill this thing. So Draupner is a self-replicating ring. And when they find it, it's at the bottom. Brock and Sindri have it, and it's at the bottom of this giant cavern that's just filled with all these rings, because it keeps replicating itself.
Yeah.
Well, they have to pull it out, and they use it, and through the magic of video game making, and you know, through the magic of storytelling, they convert it to, instead of making a ring, it makes a spear in Kratos' hand whenever he needs one. So Kratos goes from and this is the, dare I say, metaphorical change from a in-your-face berserker character that Kratos was with the Blades of Chaos, where he's got a very short, limited range, he's always up in your face, there's fire going everywhere. In this, he launches the spear kind of like an artillery, right? Like a general or a tactician making precise strikes versus just, you know, like a kid flailing his arms at a bully. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he can launch the spear, he can throw it, and it will embed itself into something, and then he can, in some very, you know, awesome fashion, stamp the end of the bottom of the spear down on the ground, and it explodes all the other spears that he has thrown from that thing. So he ends up killing Heimdall by distracting him with these explosions, because you can't think if you're getting hit in the face.
Yes.
You can't think, right? It's
yes.
The same idea of everyone's got a plan until they get hit. That's basically what it is. Kratos takes that I know what you're going to do because advantage away, because now he's distracted by getting punched in the face by a blast of lightning or whatever. So that makes you have three weapons. The Leviathan Axe, which is the axe your wife gave you, which you find out was currently previously hers, as she was a warrior leading a rebellion against Odin. So he's got the Blades of Chaos, the Leviathan Axe, which is ice, fire, and now lightning, wind. And it's just amazing. But all said and done, the game mechanics are great, the storyline is fantastic. The father-son arc is amazing. The opposing father-son arc is depressing. Mimir is like your brother who knows it all. And cracks witty jokes.
All right.
And dare I say, it's the first time in the whole series you hear Kratos say, I'm sorry for anything. And Ragnarok, the events leading up to the last hour and a half of the game. Very good description of Ragnarok. Very good pacing in the story as you go and kill Odin. Upgrades beyond anything I could possibly think of. It's a well-deserved game. It's not a perfect game, and I don't think any game is perfect. But it's definitely in the out of 10. 9 point something.
I beg to differ. I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles the Cowabunga Collection is the perfect game. And contrary to my statement,
this is why I'm the video game guy.
Contrary to my statement I made previously, I don't remember if we were recording or not when I talked about it.
What's that?
Buying that game. I have actually beat two games on there. I beat both the arcade games.
Okay. Still haven't beaten the original?
No.
It's because you suck.
Have you beaten the original?
Oh, never. It's because I suck.
Yeah.
No, that is still one of the hardest games. That Ninja Gaiden, there's Shinobi. That Ninja Gaiden and Shinobi. Some of the hardest games that have ever been made, ever.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be people who will easily say, oh, fuck you, that's not easy, or that hard. But when you're 6 years old, and there's no do-overs for anything.
When you're 40 years old, and there's no do-overs for anything, you suck at the game.
That's true. That's true. That's very true. And I will say this, too. The learning curve for games has become more technical.
Yeah.
But so much more forgiving.
Yes.
There are I think this is one of the reasons I was bringing
well,
it back.
Not only that, you can set skill levels on games now.
Yeah.
I'm not, and not every game, of course,
right.
But, you know, that was not a thing. When you were playing the computer, it was the same for everybody.
Right.
You couldn't make it, oh, I need to play this on easy level.
Right.
So I only get 5 bad guys instead of 10.
And that therein, if we can round this back to Elden Ring.
Yeah.
Is one of the reasons why it probably won. I mean, it is a beautiful game. Elegant, colorful, graphically enticing, weirdly empty. But when you find conflict, it's real conflict.
Yeah.
I mean, in Elden Ring, you can be powerful as fuck. And if you get mobbed by the wrong type of enemy and you are not in the right position, it doesn't matter how fucking sweet you are, the game's going to take you down. There is one difficulty setting on that game, and I think when you hit New Game Plus, it raises the difficulty even more because you start off with all your shit.
Yeah.
Right? But that game is incredibly punishes for making a single mistake.
Yeah.
There's no recovery. Now, there are people that can play this game with the finesse that I will never have, with a skill level I will never have. Either they memorize the patterns, or they memorize how long it takes to break away from getting hit, because in that game, and in God of War, holding out your shield doesn't help you all the time.
Yeah.
In Elden Ring, you still take damage, but you take less. In God of War, you can take a block, but if there's a overly aggressive attack, it'll knock your shield back and leave you exposed for a follow-up attack. And I played it on the basic. I played God of War on the medium difficulty.
Yeah.
Give me balance, right? I'll never attempt to beat it on Give Me God of War mode.
Yeah.
I don't have the patience.
Yeah.
I don't have the patience for it. And the only reason I have the patience for Elden Ring is the game has a interesting save system or resurrection system, how you can get your experience back and all that kind of stuff, which allows you to be willing to go back into that dangerous area. Like, you could say, let's say you just killed a whole swath of bad guys, you got a bunch of experience. If you die, your experience dies in the spot where you were at. So you can go back to where you died and pick up your experience. But if you die before that, it's all gone. And sometimes you have to sacrifice experience for that next gateway or the next campfire, the next whatever it is, to get farther. You're willing to, oh, there goes fucking an hour of my life. Well, if you want what's behind that door, you gotta forget it, better forget about it. So you have to make a gamble.
Yeah.
But God of War is a little bit more streamlined. They tried to make it to where you could customize Kratos.
Yeah.
And customize the way you wanted to play to fit your playstyle. And it's much better than 18, but at the same time, it's a much more linear path. There's monsters you will be fighting regardless of your choices. There's monsters, you know, in Elden Ring, it's an open world. You go wherever the fuck you want. There's guys you never have to fight ever.
Yeah.
You can beat the game without fighting half of those people. But in this game, you're forced to because the narrative calls for it. What time is it?
It is 11:56.
On that note, I think I'm going to be done.
All right. Well, so because it sounds like a good game.
I get to go see Violent Night.
I was thinking about actually looking into picking it up.
You should. It's a fantastic game.
I mean, it would be PS4, but I don't. I think gameplay is about the same.
Gameplay will be the same.
Yeah.
Graphically, honestly, the graphics of PS5 are gorgeous. And yes, things look more lifelike or less pixelated. But if you're looking at the experience, the gameplay experience is just as important as the visuals.
Yeah.
And I think it is an amazing game.
Yeah. I'll let you know. I haven't made any well, decisions yet.
You don't
yet.
Even have to buy it. You can borrow it for me when I'm done with it.
You have it for PS4? I don't have
the
PS5.
Have a
yeah, there's a
oh,
PS4
it's
edition.
A PS4 version?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, no. That's all right.
Okay.
Yeah, so that is it.
For thanks for listening
today.
To my rant, but I wanted to get that done because it's one of my favorite video game series, and they've evolved it into a much more mature and understandable thing. So, yeah.
Yeah. And on that note, don't forget to check us out on Twitter at Pop Culture Hoot or our Facebook group for the Pop Culture Hoot Nanny podcast. And I'd like to give a shout out to my friend Chris of the Jump Cadavers for our theme music.
Thank you.
I have a post-it note written down, and because I'm like, I need to remember to say this shit, and I never do. On that note, though, don't be a dick. Good night.
Good night.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Justin. Good night.
Pop Culture Hootenanny.
Bye.
1, 2, 3, 4, Pop Culture Hootenanny.